Open your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 1 tonight. Proverbs chapter 1. We're going to cover portions of the book of Proverbs all the way through chapter 7. And give some very practical things. Proverbs is divided into several different groups, different parts. I think I gave you the first time, but first let us pray. Father, open our ears and our eyes to the teachings of thy book, and may we understand it as we study it. Amen. I gave you, didn't I, part 1 and 2? Do you have that? It's part 1 through verse 9. I've changed Bibles tonight, and part 1 is through verse 9. Did I call that the salutation or introduction? Salutation? Salutation or introduction, either one. That's the verses 1 through 9. And then verses, chapter 1, verse 9, through chapter 7. Chapter 1, verse 9, through chapter 7, has to do with the father advising the son. Now, I've forgotten exactly what I titled that. Father-son relationship. All right. Then, how's that?
Through
9:18. Through 9:18, did I go that far? All right. Okay, thank you. Through 9:18. And through chapter 9 then. So, but anyway, this is the father-son relationship. Now, the father, of course, is Solomon, who was the son, youngest son of David and Bathsheba. Now, I'm going to discuss with you tonight the 10 times, there may be more, I think perhaps there are no more than 10, at least the 10 times that Solomon says the words, my son. Now, over and over again, until 10 times, Solomon speaks to his son. Now, Solomon had as his father David, who was the king, and Solomon was a very wise man. In his life, he became foolish, but at least Solomon was gifted with wisdom, and he is talking to his son. I was wondering tonight, before I stood to speak, how many of you fathers, and don't raise your hand, but how many of you fathers have periodical talks with your sons? How many of you teach your boys things? I recall when I was a boy, I had several friends in our crowd, and one especially was named Leroy Howard. Leroy is now a very wealthy man in the insurance business, the real estate business in Dallas area. But Leroy has a godly Christian father, and I used to admire Mr. Howard. One reason I admired him is because we lived across the street from the church, and Leroy lived about 8 blocks. In fact, Leroy lived across the street from Beverly, Mrs. Hiles, and her family. And his father always walked by our house going to church, and I always admired him tremendously. He never missed church, always there. I don't care what it was, choir practice, Wednesday night, Sunday morning, Sunday night, revival meeting, study corps, anything. Mr. Howard was always there. But Leroy used to tell me about the talks that his dad had with him, and how his dad would discuss things with him, and I would take him places with him and discuss with him some of the facts. When I say facts of life, I don't just mean facts about men and women, boys and girls, and relationship between the sexes. I mean basic way to be a gentleman and the way to behave. I reached over the hand a while ago because with the hand is a very knowledgeable person on such things. I said, what do you think are some things that young people ought to know to do and that fathers ought to teach sons? And he thought, well, I'll give you one suggestion. I'll be using it after a while. But then he reached back over again and he said, a wise man said one time, what kind of proverb was this? A Jewish proverb said, and he gave this, he that faileth to teach his son a trade teaches him to be a thief. Think of that. He that faileth to teach his son a trade teaches him to be a thief. Now, fellows, let's face this matter. You had better talk to your boys. You had better talk to your boys. Now, Solomon did. He wrote, and he wrote to his son and talked to his son, and he said, my son. Now, I want to take tonight the 10 times that he said, my son, in a possessive way, and show you what he taught his son. Now, I want every father in this building to listen to what Solomon taught his son. And I want every young person in this building to hear what Solomon wants to teach you. Now, fellas, you say, well, my son and I never did get close to each other. It's time you got close to each other. There is no excuse for a father and a son not to be close to each other. None at all. Dad, they come to me often, and they say, Brother Howard, could I talk with you? And I say, why? Well, you know how it is. But your dad's always the hardest person in the world to talk to. And dad and I, somehow they just can't, he can't talk to your parents. Now, it ought not to be that way, and if it is that way, it's the mom and daddy's fault. Children are not born not wanting to talk to mother and father. And especially in this case, am I talking about father-son and mother-daughter relationship. Now, mothers, you talk to your daughters. You just do it. You sit down. Susanna Wesley, and I love Susanna Wesley. She was the mother of John and Charles Wesley. She had 19 children. Hold it. Let's park there a while. 19 children. Did you hear what I said? 19 children. That ought to cause even the strongest to groan. 19 children. And yet, every week of her life, she spent 1 hour alone, privately with each child, teaching the child to be a lady or a gentleman. John Wesley was the 17th child. She spent 1 hour every Thursday night with John, teaching him how to be a gentleman. Now, mothers, you'd better teach your girls. Fathers, you'd better teach your boys. You had better take time to teach them. Now, don't leave it up to the school, and don't leave it up to the Sunday school. You'd better do it. Now, you say, well, I'm just not the teacher type. Then you better become the teacher type, because when that child was born, God intended you to be the teacher type. And so I want to go through these 10 things. And these 10 things, every mother ought to teach the daughter, and every father ought to teach the son. Number one, and I want you to just write a one beside the first one and a two and so forth. Number one is found in verse 10 of chapter 1. The first time we see the word, my son. Notice, my son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Now the following verses have to do with running with the right crowd. So I have a one here, and the word right, run with right crowd. The words run with right crowd are just the words right crowd. That's the first thing that Solomon taught his son, run with the right crowd. Now, Dad, you better teach your boy to run with the right crowd. Mother, you better teach your girl to run with the right crowd. You better do it. You just better do it. Solomon did. That's the first thing, to run with the right crowd. Now, I want to skip over that one, get down to number 2. Chapter 2, verse 1, is the second time we find the words my son mentioned. Chapter 2, verse 1, just drawing around the words my son. Notice, my son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee. And it goes on in chapter 2, we've already learned this, and I just want to tell you what it means. It talks about staying away from the evil man and the strange woman. Staying away from the evil man and the strange woman. So the second thing that Solomon taught his boy was to be careful about the strange woman and the evil man. Have you sat down lately and talked to your boy about women? Have you sat down lately and talked to your boy about the right kind of girlfriend? Have you sat down lately and talked to your boy about how to behave towards young ladies? Have you sat down lately and warned your boy of the temptation? Then don't be surprised if your boy goes astray. Don't be surprised if your boy ruins some girl. And it's going to be your fault because you've not taken time with your boy or girl. Now look, you say, well, I'm too busy with my job. Okay, change your job. A man in this church said not long ago, I got it with a grapevine, but I know he said it because it was all, the way I got it was from honest sources. He said, I've come about the place in my life where I feel about the only important thing, really important thing in life is, or one of the big important things in life, more important than my business, is rearing my boys. Rearing my boys. Now that's the God's truth, and you know it. You know it. I say to my children often, I say, and some people say, well, you shouldn't bring it up to your children because they're preacher's kids. Well, I don't agree with that. I say to my children often, now look, you are a preacher's child. Now, whether you like it that way or not, you are. You're a preacher's child. And if you go wrong, you're going to hurt not only your own reputation, but you're going to hurt the work of Christ around the world. Everywhere I have influence, it'll be hurt. So you have a little something extra. A reason why you ought to stay clean and do what's right. Ladies, how long has it been since you talked to your daughters how to behave toward boys? How long has it been since you taught your daughters the proper way to handle, to act around boys? You have a daughter that picks up the telephone, calls the boy on the phone. Then she needs mother to talk to her a while. She needs some advice from mother. She needs mother to sit down and counsel with her. Now, I'm simply saying, mothers, God has given you these daughters, and you'd better teach them how to behave toward the opposite sex. Now, you just better do it. Young people, you better learn how to behave towards the opposite sex. I was talking to one of my children yesterday, and I'll not go into which one it was, but I was talking about some relationship toward the opposite sex. And this particular child, as is always the case, or most of the time the case in children, they can't understand why a certain thing is wrong. And I made this statement. I said, suppose, and I called the secretary's name. I said, suppose that Miss Howe, of course, choir practice next Thursday night. I had this secretary over at our house for a prayer meeting. And she and I just prayed together and read the Bible and had a Bible study over the house while Miss Howe was going to choir practice. I said to my child, I said, would it be anything wrong with that? And the child said, well, don't think you'd be right. But I said, now, is anything basic wrong? Anything with me and one of the secretaries having a prayer meeting and reading the Bible together? And the child said, well, not basically. Well, I said, would you advise us to do it? The child said, well, of course not. Well, I said, I don't see anything wrong with it. You get the point? You don't have to see anything wrong with it. They all believe it's right because Daddy says it's right. And right because Mama says it's right. You know, I said something last Sunday night. Very, very seldom do I say anything that's really, really great, but I said something great last Sunday night. I don't know what it was, but I'm sure I must have said something great. As long as I preach, it's bound to be something great. Now, here it is. Sometimes it is wise to follow your superiors in blind faith in the superiors. Now, that's a lot of statements. We hear a lot of people about freedom. Everybody wants this freedom. Everybody gets a placard that I want my freedom. A lot of folks don't have enough sense in certain subjects to exercise that freedom. Now, for example, suppose I got tonight, I got high fever and broke out all over my face and broke out all over my body and big old whelps my eyes turn red and my tongue swell twice the size. You'd say, you ought to go to the doctor. I said, no, I demand my freedom. That's the way the world's running nowadays. I'm very much feeling. Tongue swollen double. Well, you say you ought to go to the doctor. I'm not going to tell my feelings to anybody. I'm through. No, I'm a fool, too. I mean, there's some fields that I must sell my freedom in order to be successful. Now, it doesn't mean that I lose my freedom. I have a right to go and not to go. But I have as much a right to go as I do not to go. And there ought to be times when our boys and girls ought to be taught that there are things I do not have to be. These psychologists are always saying, now when you explain to the child, be sure the child understands now what the why he shouldn't do this or why she shouldn't do this, and be sure understands now. And, well, now, it's okay for him to understand, but brother, they're not supposed to do it, understand or no understand, if mama and papa say don't do it. Other times, I'm retarding the child. Yeah, you are retarding. Now, look. You may as well make up your mind right now. If you're going to raise the right kind of girl, Mama, you're going to have to spend some time with those girls. Daddy, if you're going to raise the right kind of boy, and I can, it's the truth now, my boy's here tonight, and he won't, it embarrasses him some when I bring it up, but my boy craves time with me. Last night I went to bed, and it so happened that we were doing something else, and he said, Dad, how about wrestling with me tonight? Now, every once in a while, I go up to his room, and we just have our first-rate, knock-down, drag-out wrestling match. And I didn't do it. And before I went to bed, I was sorry I didn't. Because the day's going to come when I want to wrestle with him, and he's going to be too busy. And so I'm saying that boys crave fellowship with Dad. And Dad, you'll rule the day. You don't spend time. I mean, talk to, teach the boy about the opposite sex. Teach the boy what kind of folks to run with. We teach our children in our family devotion. Now, suppose that a man comes up at school and says, your daddy sent me to get you. What are you supposed to do? Where's Linda? Linda, where are you? Where's my girl, Linda? Linda, suppose that a fellow comes up to school, you're on the way home from school, and he says that he's a preacher, friend, went to seminary with your daddy, and I sent him to get you. What are you supposed to do? Now, and what if he says, well, you got to tell him to start after you, what he's supposed to do? Run. That's right. That's right. Thank you. Now we take time to teach our children such things as that. Boy, I'm glad she got it right. Now, look, have you ever done that to your children? Now, we practice it. We rehearse it and teach them. How are they going to know? And so, the second one of the ten is teaching them not to run with evil men or strange women. Oh, I get so weary of people. And all these worldly counselors. I get so weary of saying, well, if you shelter them while they're growing up, but they'll just run wild when they turn loose. You're full of baloney. That's what you said. My Bible says, touch not the unclean thing. Be an unequal yoke together with unbelievers. That's the Bible. Now, some ungodly philosopher, ungodly psychologist, has no more sense than a nincompoop. Take God's word. And so, you teach your boys and girls to run with the right crowd. Warn them of strange women. And warn them of evil men. That's the second thing. Number three, the third, my son, is chapter 3, verse 1. My son, and here's the third one. Forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. Now, this one is, I have entitled, number 3, the way to success. He taught his son the way to success. He taught his son the way to success. And the secret to this one is found in verse 5. And these are verses that I want every young person in this building to memorize. Every person that can read that's not married, under 21. Memorize this for next Wednesday night. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not to thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy path. Now this is a scripture every young person ought to know. That's Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean. Circle the word lean right, prop. Means prop. Prop not under thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and the word acknowledge there means think. In all thy ways think him, and he shall direct thy path. Now, on every person in the house who can read and who is under 21 and not married to stand, would you please? Every person in the house. I started to say I want you to do something for Brother Hiles. I don't. I want you to do something for yourself. I want you to now, next Wednesday night, to memorize these two verses and find out where they're found. That's Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. Now, if you will take these verses for your life, your life verses, you'll be surprised what they'll do for you. Now, I want you young people to look at them and read them out loud, Brother Hiles. Proverbs 3, verses 5 and 6. Read them out loud. Ready? Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Hold it. Stop there a minute. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. That's the first way to success. The beginning of knowledge is the what in Proverbs 1? The fear of the Lord. That's the first way to success. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Now read the rest of it. Ready? And lean not unto thine own understanding. Now what that means is this. Don't prop yourself up on what you know. Don't try to figure out your life for yourself. Trust in the Lord. Don't prop yourself. You think you ought to do. You don't know yet what you ought to do. Trust in the Lord. Don't prop yourself up on your own understanding. Now notice. Verse 6, read it. In all thy ways, acknowledge him. Hold it. That's number 3. Everything you do, acknowledge him. Seek his will about your romance. Seek his will about your school. Seek his will about your vocation. Seek his will about your pleasure. Seek his will about your home. Seek his will about your friends. In all thy ways, bring Christ into every facet of your life. Everything you do, acknowledge him. Think of him. What would he do? What is his will? Lord, lead me in every phase of it. Now the promise is, read the last part of it, and he shall direct thy path. He won't if you don't do the first 3 things. Now, that means if you will trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not to your own understanding, but acknowledge him in all of our ways, you have the promise of God, don't you? That he will direct your path. Now you memorize this for yourself. Now, I'm going to ask you how many can do it next Wednesday night. And if every adult will do it too, but especially you. And if you'll make this a life, your life passages, it'll do something for you. Okay, be seated. Look down to verse 8 now. Here's a tremendous verse. Now, won't you, it ties in with what we just read. Verse 7 again. Be not wise in thine own eyes. That means don't think you're so hot. Fear the Lord and depart evil from evil. Now, listen, this is interesting. It shall be health to thy navel and marrow to thy bones. What? If you will not lean to your own understanding, but if you will trust always in the Lord and lean upon Him, it shall be health to thy navel. Now, what in the world does this mean? It compares a young person who is not grown yet, one who is still unfolded, no pleat, life is simple, like you folks here, to an unborn baby. An unborn baby gets all the nourishment through his navel from his mother. He doesn't eat through his mouth. He doesn't decide what he eats. He makes no decision for himself. The mother makes all the decisions, and through this one connecting link, the unborn baby is fed and cared for. Now the Lord likens a young person to that unborn baby. You should not feed yourself, but let God feed you. You should not lean to your own understanding, but lean to God's understanding. Now that's the third thing. Look, that is this and the first Psalm, you can hang your life on these two verses and Psalm 1. Listen. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. And he shall be like the tree planted with the rivers of waters that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. Now there's a guaranteed way to prosper. I mean, it's guaranteed. Everything. Many years ago, I said, I'm going to claim that. I'd like for my churches to prosper. See, preachers have the idea the churches prosper because the fellow can make good talks. That is the farthest thing the truth I know of. Folks have the idea because, I'll tell you, I'll be a good preacher, I'll learn how to preach like so and so, and I'll do a great crowd. Crowds don't come because you can make good speeches. Any success comes because God says, if you walk not, walk right, stand right, sit right, meditate upon the Word of God, and let the Word of God be in your heart, whatsoever you do shall prosper. Now look, you have to prosper, God's a liar. And here's another one. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Lean not to thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge Him. If you will do those three things, God has to direct your path, and you couldn't get out of God's will if you wanted to. That's number three. Now, you'll teach your boys and girls this. Oh, my soul weeps. Young people come to me and they say, Brother Hiles, I'd like to go to a Christian school. But my mother and father won't let me. And in many cases, mothers and fathers sitting here tonight. They won't let me. They say that I can't be a success if I don't go to a so-called, and there's nothing so-called accredited school, and I go back to this again. Accreditation is, there are many types of accrediting boards. I could set one up myself and have you fellows on it. And if you don't belong to our, we don't approve your school, then you're not accredited with us. There's a Southern Association, there's a Northern Association, there are many associations of accreditation. For example, I was president of a college out in Denver, Colorado. We belong to the Association of Conservative Baptist Colleges. And we are accredited with the Conservative Baptists, but we are accredited by the secular groups. I am simply saying the Bible doesn't say if you're trying to make money and go to an accredited school, he shall direct thy path. It doesn't say that. It says if we'll trust in the law and lean upon no understanding, but in all our ways acknowledge him, he'll direct our path, and he promises success. That's God's promise. Oh, young people, claim it. Claim it, claim it. Many years ago, I laid my hand on Psalm 1, many years ago. I took Psalm 1, and I've done it many times. And I've laid my hand on that blessed Psalm. And I've said, Dear Lord, you said, Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor stands in the seat of the carnal. That means if I don't walk in the counsel of the ungodly, that means if I don't go to some ungodly, unsaved person to get my counsel. Now, you'll pardon me. I'm going to just say what I believe. Some of you folks take the word of some school counselor that believes that man came from an ape as far as the advice and counsel of what your children ought to do when they grow up before you take God's preacher or God's word. And you are taking right out from under your children the rod of success. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly. You young people, don't you listen to unconverted folks about your future. Seek counsel from converted people. Talk to these men on the platform. Talk to your pastor. Talk to your Sunday school teacher. Talk to your Christian mothers and fathers. But our counsel ought to be from God's people. Then I said, Lord, if I don't stand in the way of sinners, that means don't hang around sinners. Witness to them, but don't hang around. Nor sit in the seat of the scornful, that means if I won't be critical. But his delight is in the law of the Lord. If I'll delight myself in this book, and in his law, and meditate day and night, if I'll think about this book day and night, I have God's thoughts. Whatsoever I do. If I preach, if I build a Sunday school, if I go soul winning, if I play the liver college, if I conduct conferences, whatever I do, ask to prosper. God's not God. Now, how don't you claim that like you claim John 3:16? You get saved by claiming John 3:16 and believing it. You get prosperous by doing that. Look, you businessmen. You men, and I'm getting off set, but you men that have businesses, you claim this first verse, the first Psalm, or if you claim the first Psalm, and you'll prosper in business more than you have then. Whatsoever he does shall prosper. Okay, I'll have to get back off that. Number 4 is found in verse 11 of chapter 3 of Proverbs. That's the fourth, my son. Circle the word my son there. And I don't have anything. I just have a circle. Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do. Realize that sin pays. Realize that sin pays. Solomon taught his son that sin pays. Notice what it says. My son despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction. For whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth as the father of the son in whom he delighteth. So Solomon is saying, now, son, change your features, Solomon. Now listen, son. If you do wrong, you're going to pay for it. Now, when you do wrong, you have to pay for it. Don't despise the chastening of the Lord. Don't rebel against God. Because God's treating you like a son, a father who loves his son. He loves you. So you can expect to pay for your sin. Now, you ought to take time to remind your son, mother, fathers, and remind your daughters, mother, that sin will be paid for. Dr. Wright said a sermon, all Satan. Supposed to have worms. And that's true, and our boys and girls ought to know it. Sometimes the apples are shiny and pretty, but they all have worms. That's the fourth thing that Solomon told his son. Number 5 is in chapter 3 and verse 21. My son, again, circle it, write a 5. And I have here relationship to others. Relationship to others. You might want to take this down on the paper somewhere. But you ought to teach your daughters and your sons the right relationship to others. Now I want to go on down to verse 27, please. Here's one thing he says in this deal. Withhold not good from them to whom it is due, when it is in the power of thine hand to do it. We ought to teach our boys and girls to do good. We ought to teach our boys and girls. Father, you ought to teach your son to do good deeds. Now what he's talking about is helping the poor. We ought to teach our boys and girls, help the poor. Oh, in this selfish generation, we could spend an hour there. Number 28, verse 28. Say not unto thy neighbor, go and come again, and tomorrow I will give when thou hast it by thee. Notice that. Say thou not to thy neighbor, or to another person, come again tomorrow, I'll give you when you have it now. Now, what's talking about? It's talking about meeting your obligations. Meeting your obligations. Now, our relationship to others, young people, Solomon is teaching you, parents, you ought to teach your girls and your sons,
to meet obligation. Listen, you know one of the curses of our nation is dishonest people that will buy things by the car load they know they can't pay for. You folks that work in finance companies, you folks that work in banks, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, go out down the street and see a big color television set, $500, but you don't have to make a payment for 90 days. Well, I got news for you. 90 days is coming around. And then you're going to make it a payment for 90 years. Why haven't we got enough sense to know we got to pay for it? So what happened? Well, we used it the best we can. Put it off. Listen. Dad, sit down with your boy and say, when you say I'll pay, you pay. David, stand up. If you don't have the money to pay for something you're supposed to buy, all right, suppose you have a debt that's due on the first of the month, when's it supposed to be paid? What's a good safe plan to pay for it when? A few days before. Suppose the first of the month comes and you can't pay for it. What are you supposed to do? You're supposed to go to the person first and tell them what? The reason why you can't pay and what else? When you will pay and how you can pay it. That's right. Now, you ought to teach your boys that. You ought to teach them. I mean, boys and girls grow up nowadays thinking money grows on trees, and if you can't find it, we'll get it somewhere. We'll just go ahead and pay a dollar down and pay it up. It's crooked. Dishonest! It's unchristian. It's unchristian. Some of you folks right now have debts you think. You're months behind on debt. Listen, if you can't pay, now I mean this, if you can't pay your debts, you walk instead of, you sell your car and walk to work a hitchhike and pay your debt. Sell your television set, mortgage your furniture, shovel snow in the wintertime, mow yards in the summertime. I'll tell you that. I have a college boy coming to me sometimes from the house. I have to drop out of school. They're just far in debt. They got a 65 car out in front. 1965 car. And I've said to many of them, I said, if you've got enough integrity to call your hair and brush your teeth, go sell that car. Pay your debt. And walk. Or crawl. Or ride the streetcar bus. And you know whose fault it is, our boys and girls are like this? It's our fault, mine and yours. We pay our debts if we can. And if we don't start helping our kids, they're going to grow up and be as sorry as we are. And it's time some of you daddies sat down and talked to your boy and taught him some things, and you mothers sat down and talked to your girl. You say, I don't have time. Then do it between 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. But do it. Funny, if I speak to you on cigarettes, you'd be hollering, amen. I got more respect for a fellow that reeks with tobacco, spits and chews and dips and smokes a cigar in one side of his mouth and a pipe in the other than I have a fellow who won't pay his debt. And you put that down in your pocket and smack it. And I mean what I said. Well, we're thinking a few sins we don't commit, we've made those our list of sins. Dishonesty is one of the worst sins in the world. So Solomon said, son, listen now. Say not to thy neighbor, go and come again, tomorrow I will give thee, when thou hast it with thee. Said, you give it to him today. And verse 30, strive not with a man without cause, if he hath done thee no harm. Now, I like that. He didn't say strive not with a man. He wouldn't have cared a placard about Vietnam. He didn't teach his boy not to fight. I saw my boy, he was a little bit of crack, about 6 years old, but I taught him to protect his sisters. And I saw David one day when he was about 6, off straight, and the little kid, he had that kid, and he had his nose rubbing it in the ground. And I thought, what in the world? David's not taught to fight. And so I went over, and I said, David, come here to me. What are you doing? He said, I'm beating him up. I said, what for? He said, you ought to hear what he said about Linda. I said, go back. You're doing a good job. Listen, you mothers that teach your boys not to fight. Well, you're not teaching them the Bible. It says don't fight without a cause. what it says. Verse 30, strive not with a man without a cause. It says in the Bible, let not the sun go down your wrath, but it doesn't say what to do about so while the sun's up. It says you can't fight in the dark, that's all. Now I need it. Teach your children not to start fights, not to pick fights. Teach them to fight for what they think is right. Brother, if somebody calls your mother a dirty name, let them have it. He said, I'm not going to let my kids come back on Wednesday night. Well, you better, as little as you teaching them, some of you. You better let me have them for a while if you're not going to do anything to them. I'm saying, brother, listen, when communism says we're taking over Southeast Asia, I say, come on, let's see if you can. Well, I don't care, that's placard. Yeah, and a dime to donut says you're going to quit shaving, too. Oh, I won't go into that. But our relationship, we'll teach our boys and girls this. Now, number six is in verse 20 of chapter 4. Verse 20 of chapter 4. My son, attend to my words. Now I have here right habits. Now I want to park here for a while. If you notice in verse 23, it starts talking about right habits, and I love this part. Keep thine heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Oh, I like that one. Put away from thee a forward mouth, and perverse lips put far from thee. In other words, this is it. Let thine eyes look right on. I like that. Don't you like that? You don't get it, me. Let thine eyes look right on, and let thine eyelid look straight before thee. My mother always taught me, and I believe it's true. I can tell a shiftless man by the way it. Give me 5 minutes looking at his eyes, and I can tell you about his character. I met a man the other day. Hey, come here, brother. And introduce me. You introduce me to Brother Terry, Brother Fitz. And you put your back to people, so I want to see how the man did. Introduce us. We never have met each other.
Brother Howes, I'd like for you to meet Terry Lindsay. And Terry Lindsay and Brother Howes.
Sure, nice to know you,
Lindsay. Lindsay. Terry.
Nice to know you, Mr. Lindsay. Nice to know you. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Where you live? Now, I'm not exaggerating. That's the way the fellow did me. He wouldn't know me if he saw me on the street. Now, said, let thy eyes look right on, and thine eyelids look straight before thee. Look at verse 26. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Look at this now. Turn not to the right hand, nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil. Says, when you're walking somewhere, walk straight. When you're looking, look straight. Now, you ought to teach your boys this, and teach your girls this. I go to some of these high schools, and here's the way they walk down the hall.
Except their pants are just about to fall off.
Our boys don't know how to walk. Our girls don't know how to walk. At our house, we get our girls before we go to bed some night, and we say, now, Linda, walk across the floor. You say, what are you talking about? Walk across the floor! Teach you how to walk. David, walk! What are you? Walk! Shoulders back, straight up.
Walk like you're going somewhere. Balance your feet right. Listen, you watch the average kid on the sidewalk anymore. Just standing there. Yes, they got to lean up against something.
Why? Nobody ever taught them how to stand. Now I'm talking about character. The way you walk, the way you stand on the outside reveals the way you walk on the inside and the way you stand on the inside.
Timmy?
Sorry, it's Tim now, I guess. I'm sorry, Tim. All right? Then we'll play like you're my boy for a minute. Heaven forbid.
Now, there's several things that we ought to teach our boys. Now, watch. First place, every boy ought to be taught by his dad again and again how to shake hands. I mean, just how to shake hands. Now, when you shake hands with somebody, you grip the hand. You don't grip it too hard, you don't shake it too hard, but you grip it nicely, and you look the man straight in the eye. Now, for example, introduce me. Mr. Smith here. Mr. Smith, Mr. Hyatt, my name.
Hyatt, I'd like you to meet Mr. Smith.
How do you do, Mr. Smith? I'm so glad to know you. Now, you tell me you're glad to know me. Now, you look at me while you talk to me. Look at me. I know it's not easy, but look at me. All right. Don't go home yet. Now, they ought to be taught that. Boy, I ought to know how to shake hands. It'd shock you if you knew how many dead fish I get around this church. Fellas, hello. I want to throw it back in. You go back. And immediately I know. His dad didn't teach him anything, or his mother didn't. Where are you going to learn these things? You both learn at home. Something else. We ought to teach our boys and girls how to converse with each other. How to converse with people. Brother Hand said a while ago, this is the thing he said. He said, I think that young people ought to be taught to speak out when they speak. And I'll tell you, they do. You can say what you want to say. You can call me Southern or whatever you want to call me. But I still think that young people ought to show respect of older people enough to say, yes, ma'am, and yes, sir. Now, you just say what you want to say. Well, we don't do it up here. Okay, then start doing it up here. I mean, yes, sir, yes, sir. I was in a clothing store. Let's see. Oh, first year. Buying my boy a suit of clothes. He and I went over and looked at it, fixed it out together, just the two of us. Normally that's what we do it. And, line suit of clothes. Now, I did not notice what David was saying or doing, but when we walked out of the store, the fellow said, wait a minute, sir. He said, my name is so-and-so, a very personable young fellow, must be about 21 years of age. And he said, I want to commend you on the boy you've reared. I said, thank you. I said, what are you talking about? Well, he said, the way he shook my hand when I met him, and he said, every time he said anything to you or me, asked one of you, he said, yes, sir, or no, sir. And he said, that's the way I'm going to rear my boy. Well, I said, how old is your boy now? He said, don't have one. But when I do, that's the way I'm going to rear him. Well, I said, are you and your wife expecting a baby? He said, I'm not married. But he said, when I do get married and have a boy, that's the way I'm going to rear him. Now, I'm not saying my children are perfect, but I am saying somebody ought to teach them to shake hands and look somebody in the eye and not be shiftless and say, yes, sir, and yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, and no, sir, and the gentlemen and ladies and respect authority. And, Dad, you're going to have to do it. Young people, if Mom and Daddy don't do it, I'm telling you to do it. You get it? You get it? Yeah, you going to do wrong? You going to do right? Okay, now you see, it took me 5 minutes. You haven't done it in 18 years. This is said to my boy in town. Said, okay, are you a good boy? Yes, sir. You a good bad boy? No, sir. Okay, now, you're not going to forget what I taught you, are you? No. Today, a man sat across my desk, and he held in his power $550,000 for this church, in his power. We sat for 2.5 hours or more and talked about our loan. And concerning a part of the loan, he said to me, we changed certain things. And I said, you didn't talk to me about it. And he said, well, we figured you hadn't had the money anyway. And I said, now, we better get one thing straight right now. I don't have to have anything. Now, I said, as long as we sit across the desk and look each other square in the eye, I don't look down at you or up at you. We'll do business together. But I said, if I've got to be a beggar,
I either have my pride and my right to decision and manhood that have $10 million or how much else your company has. Now, you know how I learned that? Mama taught me. Mama said, son, don't you ever look up to anybody and don't you ever look down to anybody. Always look to everybody across the desk on the level. And I mean this. There's not a person that I see anywhere that I look down at. Now, anybody that knows me knows that's the truth. I don't care how dirty a man is or how poorly he's dressed. I never look down at a man. But I don't care how much money he's got. I figure that he puts his trousers on one leg at a time just like I do. And if he don't brush his teeth, he'll have halitosis too. And so I look up to nobody. That's the truth. Now, I learned that at my mother's knee. Now, if she hadn't taught me, I'd have been cowed. It is so important that we don't raise a generation of snobs that think they're better than somebody else. Neither a generation of folks that have inferiority complexes that think everybody's better than they are. But where are they going to learn it? Mom and Daddy got to teach them. Solomon did. Teach our boys and girls how to look, how to walk, how to dress, how to stand, how to converse, how to shake hands, how to mix and mingle with people. I think that our boys and girls ought to be taught to dress properly. I'm not going to say anything about this tonight because it might be embarrassing, but I do think that mothers and fathers ought to teach boys to dress like gentlemen. That's one reason why I thank God for Bob Jones University. That's one reason why I thank God for it. You go on that campus, brother, and you don't see a bunch of slouches. Now, they may be too strict along some lines. I don't think they are myself, but we won't talk about that. But somebody needs to teach our Christian boys and girls how to dress. I don't mean you how to match your ties and socks, though I think that's good. But I do mean that we ought to be appropriate. Okay, say what you want to say, but somebody ought to teach some of us about it. How many of you, now be honest about it, how many of you look at my tie and my handkerchief or my socks or my shoes and see whether my shoes are shined and the socks go with my outfit? How many of you at least sometimes take notice to check on me a little bit? Good, nice. I'll have a complex now. Honey, what was I doing last night when you came in from WMS? Polishing shoes. How many pairs of shoes? I had 5 pairs of shoes down. And I spent from 9:30 to 11:25 polishing my shoes last night. Think I did a good job? That pretty? Now, look. I see preachers preaching in big meetings. Nobody ever taught them to shine their shoes. What do you say, Brother House? You're making such a big to-do out of a few little things. Okay, you check the ocean and you'll find it's just made up of a whole lot of drops. You check your front yard and just divide it down to its smallest piece and you'll find it's made up of a bunch of little bitty things. Drains of dirt. And life is made up of I said today in our office, we're talking about our stationery. And I said to one of the secretaries, who happens to be our secretary, the greatest in all the world. But I said, now, about this. And she said, I think this is acceptable. I said, we at First Baptist don't put out acceptable stuff. We put out the best. You see. I mean, we put out the same kind of a letterhead better than a Pentagon. We put out a letter written in type better than the end of the steel. I mean, this is God's business. Let's do it right. And somebody's got to teach our boys and girls to do things right. I don't know whether you realize what you're getting tonight, but you're getting some things that could save your children. A person that won't wear a dirty shirt won't have a dirty heart. Person that'll reach up and grab a shirt and say, it's got a few spots on it. I think I can cover it up. He'll say the same thing about his mind, about his heart. Have a few spots in your mind, a few dirty thoughts. I don't worry about his fear. Listen, brother, if you've got a spot right back there and you've got to wear an overcoat,
you'll develop the kind of character that'll only have the good character that has no spots that can be seen. What have you got underneath the rug? The person that'll sleep there underneath the rug will sleep there in the hidden recess of the heart. And someday, somebody's going to come in and go look under that rug, and it might be me. And someday, somebody's going to find out the dirt on the rug in your heart. Teach your boys and girls, daddies and mothers. Number seven, we're almost through, in spite of the fact that we just got through number six. My son, attend to my wisdom. Now, number seven deals with strange women, how to handle strange women. How to handle strange women. Number eight, chapter 6, verse 1. Number 7 was chapter 5, verse 1. Strange women. Number 8, chapter 6, verse 1. Honesty and work. Honesty and work. I think we'll stop. I think we'll stop. We'll finish next week. But I want you to get this one thing. You. Well, you said, I tried that. My son said he didn't have any fun. I'm not talking about fun. Well, I tried that to my daughter, and she just fussed and threw a fit. Okay, then you throw a fit and say, "Sit still while I'm talking to you." What's wrong with causing? Oh boy, I look out sometimes, and I don't sit in the seat of the scornful. And I'm not criticizing you, but I watch out and see sometimes folks who have children in the service sitting beside them, and I wonder who's the boss. I mean, I really do. Where was I the other day? Where was I? In the doctor's office. And here was a fellow who had a little girl who had a fever. No, she didn't. No, she didn't. She was there with him. Had another kid, had a fever, waiting for the doctor. The little girl was about 3 years old. And she cried. And he said, "Hush!" And she knew that didn't mean anything. What hush means and interpreted is, I'm not going to do anything, but I sure wish I'd like it better if you cried. And she knew that. So she cried some more. So he got up and said, "Do you want a drink of water?" And so he got a drink of water. And she cried some more. And so he said, "Oh, how about a sucker?" So he said, "Fuck it, got a sucker, gave it to her, she got it, licked on it, cried some more." He said, "You want a nickel?" He said, "Fuck it, got a nickel, gave it to her, cried some more." Where I came from, they call that bribery. It was against the law. That big old man weighed 235 or 40 or 50 pounds, and that little girl weighed 25 or 30 pounds, was running him ragged. And finally, he finally revealed himself, and he said, "Honey, please be quiet. If he had just put her in my hand for 60 seconds, either she would have been quiet, or she would have the most valid reason for crying she had ever had in her life. It wouldn't have taken me. I was on a plane going to Los Angeles. I got on. There was only one seat. Well, there was no seat next to the window of the aisle. And there was a little lady about 21 years of age and had a little kid about 2 in the center seat. And from Chicago to Denver, that kid threw a fit. Oh, he was all over her. Please. Mommy will buy you a toy when we get to Los Angeles." And I was trying to study. And that kid had been all over me. And look, he'd crawl on me. And she'd say, "Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do." And we got over Denver. I looked over and said, "Sister!" That boy looked at me and he said under his breath, and I wonder if he meant what he said. "I'm going to just try one more wiggle." And he tried. I said, "Sit still! Don't you move on here till I tell you to move." He stared at me and he didn't move.
He sat there 10 minutes before she said anything, he said anything, or I said anything. I was afraid to say anything. And so after about 10 minutes, I said, "That's a good boy there. You notice how he minded me? You get it? That's a good boy there." The first time in that little kid's life, he felt some pride. He was a good boy. He'd minded. He'd learned that there was joy in minding. There's joy in discipline. That there's satisfaction in obeying. And I said, "Let's play a game. Play peepie." And he said, I said, "Peepie." He laughed. And he said, "Peepie." And I laughed. And then he started to, I said, "Phil." He said, "Phil." Now, it doesn't take but 2 or 3 minutes if you mean it. But you say, "If you do that again, I'm going to fight you." He knows you're a liar. He knows you will not do it. You said that 40 times yesterday. I didn't spank him once. You'd spank him good and hard. He wouldn't have said 40 times tomorrow. Somebody's got to teach our boys and girls fear of God, ladies and gentlemen. And you go home tonight, that is, and look in the mirror, and you look who's going to teach your voice.